Welcome to Oh, I Like That, a podcast about things we like and occasionally things we don't. I'm Rachel Wilkerson-Miller.
And I'm Sally Tamarkin. And Rachel, I think we're going to deliver on things we occasionally don't.
I was thinking that as I read it. And then I was like, don't think about it because you're going to break. But we definitely have some things we don't to share today. We sure do.
Yeah, we sure do. No spoilies. We're going to get to it in a little bit. But let's start with a good old-fashioned vibe check. Rachel, tell me everything about your vibe.
Okay, well, it's been a little while since we recorded. So Thanksgiving has come and gone. It is now fully December. My vibe is holidays and birthday at the same time because my girlfriend's birthday is next week and her party, which is going to be outdoors and fully vaccinated, is tomorrow night. So that's my vibe, is I'm just collecting all the little things for this party, which because it's December and we're trying to do this outside, options were limited. But what I really wanted to do was, I saw on a TikTok over the summer, this hot tub boat tour. So like an East River boat tour where the boat has been outfitted with hot tubs. And I was like, this is a perfect birthday party idea. I want to do this. So I tried to book the boat and couldn't. And they were like, oh no, it's gone south for the winter. It's in Florida for now. So yeah.
I think of that as something birds have to do, not boats.
Right. Also, I just feel like this is the peak season for when you're actually going to want to use it. So that aside, I started looking at other options and I was like, okay, maybe I can find other outdoor hot tubs in New York, and found this like hot tub backyard spa situation. So it's like a legitimate spa, but I think like in a brownstone, and there's an outdoor hot tub and all these like little outdoor saunas. They're like wooden, they look like little wooden teeny Airstream trailers, which the doors can stay open. It's going to be like, there's a fire pit. We're going to make it. It's like one of those things that's like cool, but also kind of weird, but also it's New York and like we're doing our best. So I think it's going to be fun. The theme is winter cowgirls. And I think everyone's going to really come dressed to impress. We got custom airbrushed sweatshirts for this that are incredible.
Naturally.
Yeah. Got a lot of little, again, I'm like really trying hard not to do too much, as is my wont. So, but I did get like an ice cream cake, and then if you search cowgirl birthday, cowboy birthday, and cowgirl bachelorette, like you find a lot. You also find a penis wearing a cowboy hat.
Sure.
Cupcake topper, which I didn't order. It's not that kind of a party. But I got a bunch of little things to like decorate the cake with and to make it all, like pull it all together. So I think it's going to be a fun night.
It sounds incredible. And I just want to mention that you and I are both afflicted with the terrible condition of having a partner whose birthday is in December, and trying to make their thing special while dealing with the holidays is a whole thing. And every year I make my partner's birthday about me because it's so hard. And you are kind of going to be my like Christmas birthday mentor, because you're really going for it. And it sounds like it's going to be an awesome party.
I'm really excited. I think what helped me this year was to start planning it in October, because I was like, it always comes up so fast after Thanksgiving and it's too late. So I started planning it early and that helped a lot. So I feel pretty good going into it, but fingers crossed it will be everything she's dreamed of in her birthday party.
Well, now my partner's birthday is 3 days before Christmas, and luckily she's had a lifetime of disappointing birthdays because no one's ever like around for her birthday, and or people are like too busy to do anything, and people are like, here's your Christmas and birthday present. So the bar is like pretty low for me to, you know, make a magical birthday for her. So I think it's all going to be okay. But that party sounds awesome. I wish I could be there, but this is a segue.
I was like, yeah, I see where you're going with this. Tell us why you can't be there, Sally.
Rachel, I run a cat daycare for my two cats. So I'm not going to go into like all the ups and downs of the last couple weeks, but we have a cat named Miles. He's great. He got 11 of his teeth pulled last week.
Four miles.
He's really been through the ringer. But then we also have this kitten named Manny, who's really sweet and just perfect. We found out that he was really sick and that he might not get better. In fact, I'm trying to like keep it light, but he got a really grave prognosis basically. But then he ended up responding to this medicine, and now he's bouncing off the walls, but maybe he's not okay. It's like, basically it's a whole thing. But the thing is, Manny is contagious, and so he has to be separated from Miles. So like, do you ever watch shows on HGTV and there's like a couple that's looking for a new house because they have like too many kids to be contained in their current home? And you see the inside of their current house, and it's like, it's just completely everything in the house functions as like furniture or toys for children. Mm-hmm. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. that's kind of our existence right now. Like everything about like the physical plant of our home is about keeping our cats separated. And it's like cats are really wily. They can jump really high mm-hmm. and they can squeeze into tiny spaces. So it's been very difficult to keep them separated. My partner made a calendar with like shifts of like who is on Manny duty because he also has to take medicine. It's a whole thing. And anyway, the point is the vibe here is like incredibly chaotic. It's also been sometimes incredibly sad, other times incredibly joyous. And Rachel, you have been on this ride with me because you've been getting mm-hmm. like more or less live text updates. I feel like you could probably lecture vet students about Manny's chart. So you've been on this journey with me. You know what's up. So, you know, I think you can speak to just the chaos of my existence the last couple of weeks. But I will say that the one thing that anchors us all and gives us all some calm is the magic of the season. We have a very special guest who we're very excited to have on. Today on Oh, I Like That, our guest is Aubrey Gordon. Aubrey, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me. This is very exciting to me. I'm a dedicated listener to the show.
So it's you're a likey?
Parasocial treat.
You're a likehead? We've been trying to figure out what our listeners would be called. Like, we said likeys, we said likeheads, thatters. No, I don't know.
Sally, did we say these? Or are these just thoughts you have that you've not
mentioned yet? Yeah.
These are deranged things I thought and almost texted you and was like, it's too weird. Okay. So for those of you who don't know Aubrey, I'm going to read a short bio. Aubrey Gordon writes under the pseudonym of Your Fat Friend, illuminating the experiences of fat people and urging greater compassion for people of all sizes. Her work has also been featured in Self, Health, The New York Times, Lit Hub, and more. She also co-hosts the podcast Maintenance Phase with Michael Hobbs, which I listen to. I'm a real maintenance head.
Yes, same. I was going to say, this is going both ways. Like, yeah. I'm like, wow, the voice of my last road trip is here.
It's here.
Yep.
Where the two dive deep into the history and science behind wellness and weight loss trends, a topic that is so bananas close to my heart, as you know,
yeah.
Aubrey.
It's, yeah, yes. I think you probably can't work in some form of like health related or like at this point, even sort of like self-care related media, or even just like women's media, sort of air quotes, women's media,
yeah,
without having like really a lot of thoughts and feelings about diets and wellness trends.
Yeah.
Oil
so many thoughts and feelings.
And yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to just say, like, just we can get a little compliment pile on going here. Mm-hmm. One of the amazing things about Maintenance Phase is that you two are doing really awesome reporting and research, and you're bringing all of these really important facts to the masses. Like, I many a time as a health journalist would I read something and be like, this is fake, this has been proven not to be real, this has been proven to do harm, and be like, why aren't more people talking about this, why aren't more people mad? And listening to Maintenance Phase and also seeing what your listeners like tweet at you and stuff like that, and seeing people say like, I'm adding this to my curriculum and stuff, it's like you are actually making like such a tangible difference, and people are getting as angry as we all should have been for the last like several generations about all this shit. So I feel like you're doing also like an amazing public service.
Oh, thanks, bud. I mean, I feel like there's this thing that happens where the most thoughtful people that I know, the biggest critical thinkers that I know, people who are like very dedicated to social justice work, like all kinds of people, all manner of people have sort of this weird goldfish memory when it comes to diets and wellness trends, where they're like, okay, so the last one didn't work, but this one is definitely going to be it. Here we go. And you're like, okay, but it's not just the last one. It's the last like 186. It's been like, not any of them have worked. So maybe let's talk about that pattern.
Yeah.
And it's really satisfying to talk about that into a microphone. It's very satisfying.
Good. Yeah. I'm glad that you're getting satisfaction out of it, because just mm-hmm. listening to it, I very much am. Like, punching the air.
It's really good. I should also say that part of the reason I'm so excited to do this episode in particular is because not only do you have such a great analysis of really smart things, but you also have really great opinions on really dumb things, which if you subscribe to the Maintenance Phase Patreon, you can hear all of those. And like the Shallow Hal episode and the Bachelor episode specifically are what come to mind. And I feel like smart people talking about dumb things is a great genre, and I hope that's what today's episode turns into, because after listening to that Bachelor episode, that's how this percolated, that I was like, oh man, she's got good thoughts on not just horrible, harmful things, but also really fun things that are going to be, or those things aren't fun. I mean, actually, let me take it back. The Bachelor is kind of horrible and harmful in its own way, but it's also just like a different genre, and I'm excited to introduce the listeners to like something totally different that they might not know that you do.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm jazzed about it. I love getting tuned up and yelling a little bit about not as great as they could be.
I have a feeling that smart people talking about dumb things could be the title of this episode. We'll see what happens. Rachel, could you like get us going, set the scene, tell us what's up?
Okay, well, the scene is a bunch of big city, you know, big city folks who've gone back to their small town just in time for the holidays. We are talking about queer holiday romance movies. I'm not going to use the term rom-com because I don't think that these meet that definition. They are light on com, and also they don't really like follow the traditional arc of rom-com. So I think we can safely call them romance movies. So I think people tend to think of these as Hallmark movies. Hallmark isn't the only one that, like, the only network that's making them. They're on Netflix and Lifetime and like BET. Every channel is making them at this point, which we're going to get into in a minute. But in the past few years, more networks have gotten with the times, I guess, in this very antiquated genre and introduced gay men, gay white men as an option for these. And then this year, there are a couple. I mean, I guess last year we had some things too with like Happiest Season, but like there's an offering of ones about queer women this year. So we are taking the moment to talk about three different films that we viewed and share our thoughts.
I feel excited and I feel some trepidation about where we're going to go and what we're going to be offering our listeners, because I think I would love to be able to say you're all going to want to run out and see these queer holiday romance movies. But I don't know if that's going to happen, Rachel. I don't know.
I'm hoping that you will walk away from this at least wanting to see one of them, perhaps more, but I'm hoping at least one will seem worth it.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
Listen. I'll tell you this, at least one of these is, and I know exactly which one, is making it into my regular rotation of viewing, and like, we'll get there.
Yeah, that's extremely exciting to me. That makes me feel less bad about the many hours we requested you watch for this.
Okay, so to kick things off, I'm going to give a little bit of background on this genre, how we got here. And so a lot of what I'm going to be talking about is Hallmark movies. Again, Hallmark is like the category definer. They have made this a thing. And so none of the movies we watch are actually Hallmark movies, but I think it's like, this is what everyone else is chasing and riffing on. So it's really helpful to know like how Hallmark became Hallmark. And then we can kind of talk about like why Netflix is getting into it and why Lifetime is. So, okay. So going back to 1951, Hallmark sponsored a live TV special, a Christmas-themed opera on NBC, and it led to Hallmark sponsoring more of these like high art performances that were called Hallmark Hall of Fame. So like Hallmark was a sponsor of these, which I like didn't even think like, oh, Hallmark greeting cards is like the main advertiser in these. Like that just didn't really like click for me. I think of Hallmark as its own entity now, but that's where they started. And then what is the Hallmark channel now? This is from a Vox article saying it began as two different religious programmers sharing space on the same satellite transponder. The two eventually merged in 1993 to form the Faith and Values Channel, which was later renamed the Odyssey Network. The Hallmark greeting card company, with an assist from the Jim Henson Company, Yes Really, bought Odyssey in 1998, eventually relaunching it in 2001 as the Hallmark Channel. Hallmark doesn't air religious programming, but its roots as a religious network combined with its family-friendly standard have yielded an MO that is very, very traditionalist. So like if you've paid even like passing attention to their programming in the past 10 years, you can see like it is very quote unquote family-friendly, very, you know, palatable to some white, you know, actors mostly cast in these. So to get to the romance movies specifically, they actually started, according to the AV Club, as romance novels. Like, they started by like adapting romance novels for these because it was like, there's a built-in audience here. Let's do this. And they did really well. So the AV Club references a person named Gwen Rays of the romance blog Fresh Fiction, who says that a 2009 Lifetime adaptation of a Nora Roberts novel starring Leanne Rimes was like an industry turning point. This was like, okay, we can make money here, basically. So now it's like become a viewing bonanza. Got some numbers here to share. The opening weekend of the channel's annual Christmas Palooza drew 15.2 million unique viewers in 2016, but in 2017 it pulled in 17.6 million unique viewers, a 16% increase. This is from a Vox article, by the way. In 2018, it said the network has seen 69.2 million unique viewers across the various Hallmark channels. There's like a bunch, there's movies and mysteries and all these other things. And they're hoping to crack 90 million viewers by the time the Christmas extravaganza ends. So it's just like, people love these movies. It's like when Hallmark does the most of their business and they just like, it's like the end of the year. Although apparently now they do holiday programming all year. So if you turn it on in the spring, like you're going to see spring related things. I think they have like a wedding season. And one of the things that I read in an AV Club article was saying like, these movies are very cheap to make, which like seems kind of obvious, but it was helpful to see them say like, there's no stunts, there's no special effects. They're not casting big name actors, and they keep airing them year after year. So even if it doesn't do great in its first year, they can like use it as sort of filler the next year when people are tuning in again and they'll rewatch them. So they just like pay off big time. So because this is such a huge thing, other networks have followed. So that's why Lifetime and now Netflix and again, a bunch of other networks are getting in on this because it's like there is an appetite for this. Why exactly? I think is one of the questions we can attempt to answer, but that's kind of the background on how we got here.
And I feel like that formula, even though we didn't watch any Hallmark movies for this episode, I feel like the formula of like palatable, Christmassy attempts to fill you with good feelings, that vibe is like, I think now what we think of as like the seasonal rom-com, you know, like you know, movies like, I don't know, I blacked out Happiest Season, so I don't remember what it was like, but like Single All the Way on Netflix is not a movie we're going to talk about, but it's on Netflix, but it still kind of follows this exact same formula, right?
Yeah.
Like, also, I just want to say, like, the other thing these movies do is they cast actors that, like, there will be one person who was famous at some point. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's like the secret to,
yeah.
Like, it's like they don't like, just, I'm going to stop in a second, but I just want to say Kathy Najimy is in Single All the Way. Again, something that we're not talking about. And Ricky Lake is in Under the Christmas Tree. And I am spoiling what we're talking about, but in Christmas at the Ranch, the actor who played the Bionic Woman is in that. So it's like these people were at one time famous. So some, you're probably going to recognize them. Some part of your brain will recognize them, but they don't need to get paid very much money, probably.
Yeah. The current like queen of Hallmark is noted anti-vaxxer Candace Cameron Bure. So she's like the one who's in everything right now. We don't like her. No. But I also should say, so sort of speaking of like the you know, the mild, the formula, the inoffensive, I should also talk a little bit about this incredible interview that I read that was with two writers of Hallmark movies that I'm going to link to. It's an Entertainment Weekly article that is absolutely worth a read because they share a ton about like what they can and can't do. And it's like why these movies all look and feel the same every year from story to story. It's all kind of the same. And it starts with the fact that Hallmark just as a network has a ton of rules and they work with the same production companies. So the production companies will say to the writers like, hey, this is what they're looking for. If you want to try to like sell a script, you need to like know this in advance. Don't waste your time. If you're not going to do the things that they want to see, you're going to have to rewrite it. So one of the things that really jumped out to me is they were like, there's actually, once you start putting all these rules in, the script kind of writes itself because there's just not a lot of room. Like, there's not a lot you can do with it. There's so many limitations. But also it makes them easy to write. Oh, go ahead.
Can I guess, is one of the rules the family business is at stake?
It is, that Thank is not you. One of the rules, but that is like definitely
strongly sure recommended. Up,
strongly recommended. Yeah. It's like, again, it's like when you eliminate all of the options for like actual conflict, you are left with like the family business is at stake or like I don't know, enemies to friends, but enemies is too strong of a word, which they talk about. But like, there's just not a lot of options for like what will work. And they just are like going to do the safe things that have worked year after year because they don't want anything that anyone could possibly complain about, basically, which is just like, it's one way to do it, I guess.
So art, basically, you know, like
yeah. mm-hmm.
the company that's paying for it tells you what you can and can't talk about. Then mm-hmm. you make sure there's no conflict. And then mm-hmm. congratulations, you've made art.
Yep. So one of the things that the writers said is like, if you're writing a movie for Netflix, for example, you could show a character getting drunk. You cannot show that in a Hallmark movie. Just like that's out. Like, no. The first rule is snow. The writers were saying that they really wanted to write a movie where the sort of basic conflict was like, will there be snow for Christmas? And Hallmark was like, that there cannot be a question. Like, there can't be, we cannot wait until Christmas for snow. We must have snow the whole movie. And they were also like, on that note, there has to be sort of like Christmas in every scene. So you're not going to just have characters like walking down the street, talking, drinking a coffee, or like in the backyard. You're going to have them like wrapping Christmas gifts or making cookies. Like, it's got to be there throughout in every single scene. They said one script they had, like the big note was just there isn't enough Christmas in this. Another thing that they were saying is they like there is this sort of like enemies to lovers trope in romance. But in this, they can't not like each other. It says you can't have too much conflict, but you need people to sort of be angry. And one of the people being interviewed says, like, there has to be somebody they hate. And then the other one says, no, you're not allowed to use the word hate or the word crazy in Hallmark. Everything goes through a mildness filter. You have to mildify everything, that you kind of have to take all the edges off. It's like everything gets sanded, filed down so the sharp edges come off. Off-brand is the word they use for anything that doesn't fit. Like if you use the word stupid or crazy, or if someone is too mean or sexual, all those things are off-brand. And then they said, I've said it's like writing a movie in the 40s, but then I look at a movie from the 40s and it's edgier. So it's not like writing a movie in the 40s.
Lots of drunk people in movies from the 40s. I'll give them that. Lots of yep. drunk people.
Yep.
Yes.
Just up and down drunk people.
It's so wild. And you can see that DNA in the movies we watched, as particularly the Lifetime movie, that it's just like, wow, it's not there. And then it really is just like, what does that leave you with? Nothing right. very interesting.
Well, it leaves you with a few of the movies we're going to talk about.
It does, which again are not Hallmark movies, but like you can see why these movies look this way. So with all of this said, I would love for both of you to share, like, where are you in your Christmas romance journey? Where are you coming from as you come to this app, like to this recording? What movies had you seen? Like, had you seen anything in this genre, queer or otherwise, before? Like, do you read romance novels, anything like that? I would just kind of love to get a background of where everyone's coming from.
So I never super got into Christmas movies because they felt super duper straight and like they didn't really bear any resemblance to a world that I lived in or a world that I particularly wanted to live in. It just felt sort of antiseptic in a way that was just not totally for me. Also, I never got super into romance novels or romance movies because my brain is broken in a particular way where if a movie makes me cry, I feel like I'm being manipulated, which is like, that's a thing. That's a me thing to work on. it's just my feedback for myself. And all the movies we're going to talk about today are queer movies, which I also sort of took a break from because so many of them, when I was like way deep into queer movies, were super duper low budget. And like, that's not a criticism of the films themselves, but felt more like a really unpleasant reminder of like how little investment there is in queer art and media. So I feel like I'm coming in real fresh to like everything that's happening here today, for better or for worse. That's yep. what's happening with me. How about you, Sally?
Yeah, I feel like I'm coming in like pretty similarly fresh. I never really got into Christmas movies. I mean, I was raised Jewish, and I think part of the experience of being raised Jewish is being pointed out to you over and over and over again that there's this thing that like isn't for you and you're not a part of, and it's for them and let them have their thing. It's kind of silly. It's kind of, they think there's a dude that brings them presents and they sing these songs, and it's just, it's all kind of ridiculous. And I'm very happy to report that as an adult who's in a relationship with someone who celebrates Christmas and loves Christmas, I've come to really appreciate it and appreciate the season and find a lot of things to love about it. But growing up, between being told, like, you know, we don't do that, that's their thing, and being, and then feeling like left out when there was a lot of Christmas stuff going on in the world or at school or whatever, I just never, Christmas was just never like a thing I paid attention to or cared about. It was always just another day. And so Christmas movies like didn't really do anything for me. Like I was just like, I don't get what the big deal is. Like I never, because really until a couple of years ago, when you like wake up and there's presents for you, I was like, oh, this is really cool. You wake up and there's presents. I just never had any of that. So all that is to say, like, you know, I know I've been aware of Christmas, but I've just, it's never been a thing I cared that much about. And also just always felt really foreign to me just as a concept, because it's like, it's this thing that you get really psyched about and it's really cozy and it's festive and the lights are really bright. And that's just like, not like, I'm sorry to speak for all like white American Ashkenazi Jews, but like, we're not about like that. Like we're not about like all the, like, how everything is like. I was saying to you, Rachel, that like Christians really have it made because you're always looking forward to either Christmas or heaven. And like Jews are like, we're just like, look, everything's really bad now. It's probably going to get worse and you can't take it with you, you know? So I think there's a very, like, there's something that's very like essential about the essence of Christmas that has never really like taken root in me. And as far as romances, it's never been a genre that I've loved that much. I never watched rom-coms. Like I never made a point of like watching them because they were always really straight and I just had no interest. And also then was really resentful. I was like, I cannot, like, please tell me another story. I cannot watch two, like a man and a, like a beautiful white thin man and beautiful white thin woman, like flirt and then like have sex. Like I don't care. All that is to say, I feel like I'm coming in not only like pretty fresh, but also with like kind of a chip on my shoulder about like various aspects of the project. Having said that, if you tell me I'm going to watch a queer movie, I'm going to be pretty fucking psyched. So like I, you know, it's like, I'm instantly like, I'm in it. I'm in it to win it. Even if like, it's like maybe genres that I'm not usually used to or not usually that into. So that's me. I'm coming in with hostility.
Okay. Also, just like, I appreciate that your review on just like Christmas as a holiday was essentially like, I'm familiar with its work.
That is,
seen it, got it
right up.
Yeah, that's yeah, perfect. Totally. Okay, so I will share mine before we kind of move on. But I first started paying attention just last year, I think, like during the pandemic. It was like, how can we like find things to do and enjoy this year? And I think after watching Happiest Season, I was like, are there any others out there? So I watched one that is called, I had to look this up the other day because I could have sworn it had the same title as one of the ones that we watched this year. It's called Dashing in December, and it stars Andie MacDowell, who, again, somebody you'll recognize. Guess what? The family business is up for sale. And somebody's come home from the big city. Like, that's the whole thing. And it was so boring and mellow. And then we watched one called The Christmas Setup, which stars Fran Drescher as the mom. And this guy, white guy from, I think, New York City, goes home to his, you know, white family, small town holiday, and his mom sets him up. The two actors are actually married in real life, which is like a mildly interesting fact. I don't think they had that much chemistry for the fact that they were married in real life, but like, neat, whatever. It was also just so, they were, both of these movies were so mellow to the point of like being sleepy. Like I really was like, I don't really know why people watch these, because like even the fact that they were gay, just like it was doing nothing for me. But I want to mention one thing from The Christmas Setup, which I'm pretty sure is the name, which is Andie MacDowell. Like, I don't remember what plot point gets them to this point, but it's a really minor thing. I think that like a local building is up for sale, like the old train station, and they don't want it to be sold. And I think maybe Andie MacDowell like maybe gets arrested or like gets in some, like, I could be misremembering that part, but I think there's some kind of like light, you know,
hijinks.
Yeah. And she says, gotta make good trouble, right? And the way that like my girlfriend and I like levitated off the couch when she said this, it was so like, oh my, like, I just didn't even, I was just like, I can't process this. Like, I am short circuiting the way she delivered this line. I think I will send you guys the video later because I think I still have it on my phone because we just like lost our minds over this. And it was like, how did that make it in there? Why? Like, what? Like, this is about the local train station at the end of the day. It was just such a like, and to me, that is like the essence of these movies is like, they're very mellow, very mild, very inoffensive. But then occasionally you just get one thing in there that you're like the Scooby-Doo, like, huh? Like,
yeah.
What did I just hear that, you know, Hallmark wouldn't catch, but is a, I don't even know what I would call that moment. Like just a real surprise moment. So
yeah, it's like topical, but completely like irreverent, but in a really bad way.
Yeah.
Not good irreverent, bad irreverent.
Yeah. Just genuinely shocking. So we watched those last year and also, you know, we aren't going to get into Carol, which is kind of like the ultimate queer Christmas movie. I know, but isn't it a different, it's like a film. It's not, we're not talking about films today. We're not here to talk about great movies. So I had seen that at Sally's recommendation. But yeah, I think, and romance, like I've read a couple and I've just been like, this is boring. What's going on here? And I think one of the reasons I just read a not Christmas lesbian romance novel because it was like a free, I got a free copy of it. And it was so boring. And I think it's because in a romance, if you want the people to have sex so you can have a sex scene, you have to get them together actually early on. It can't end with them getting together. But then it's like, well, after they get together, then how do you have conflict to sustain the rest of it? And it just like, it will not shock you to hear that it involved the family business.
No, are you serious?
Was it in peril?
Two family businesses, actually. Both what? Characters' family businesses. It was just the plot of You've Got Mail. but one of the characters is like a gentrifier whose family is going to buy this building. And the other character like owns this bookstore.
That seems exactly the plot of You've Got Mail.
It's like very much the plot of You've Got Mail without the like email aspect of it. But everything else is super similar. They're all just so mild. They're so mellow. Yeah. They're so unexciting. So yeah. that's what I'm bringing to this.
I just want to say that like if someone could make a movie with the energy of Bound, but make it like a holiday movie, that's what the world needs.
Yeah.
That's exactly
I want the Bound sequel set at the holidays.
I'll say also in defense of this Andy McDowell movie that I have not seen, I have celebrated 38 Christmases and every year there's like, we gotta save a train station.
It's just like, it's so true. Like, yeah. We've all been there.
Yeah. So like that I appreciate home. From just like a realism standpoint, like that's a real slice of life. Yeah.
And I just want to say also, of course it's a train station because it has to be like something that is like Norman Rockwellian and nostalgic, like, and trains are nostalgic, whereas like other forms of transportation aren't, they're too modern. So it's like, yeah, it's just, it's just perfect.
They're not saving the Greyhound station, right?
Well, that's a whole other kind of nostalgia. Yeah.
Okay, so Sally, do you want to share the slate of the three movies that we're going to talk about today?
Yes. Okay, so we are going to talk about Christmas at the Ranch, a Lifetime movie called Under the Christmas Tree, and a short called The Syed Family Xmas Eve Game Night. And we're also going to talk about, it's kind of a bonus, like honorable mention is When Harry Met Santa, which is another short, just your basic horny Santa movie.
Normal.
And also a commercial for the
commercial for the Norwegian post office.
Yeah.
And weirdly, like you said, we weren't talking about films, but like that, if there is a film in this bunch, it is the Norwegian post office ad.
Yeah.
So the first movie is Christmas at the Ranch, which is on the Telo Network, which is an LGBTQ+ women's network.
Streaming.
You can get it there. It came out on December 1st. And I'm just going to read the synopsis here from the production company, which is, when Haley Hollis returns to her family ranch to try and save it from closure, she wasn't banking on spending so much time with ranch hand Kate or falling for her.
Great.
I want to just say one thing, which is, well, Aubrey, I think we didn't send you the trailer for this, which we should have.
The trailer is so bad that like even before we were talking about this episode, we were sending these around and it was like, have they ever seen a movie trailer before? Like the way this is cut is so bad. And it like is cut the same way the movie is cut.
It's almost like, it's weirdly like things are out of sync. I don't know. It's very strange. Okay. So the next movie is a Lifetime movie called Under the Christmas Tree. It will be out on December 19th. Marketing whiz Alma Beltran and Christmas tree whisperer Charlie Fremont cross paths when Charlie finds the perfect tree for the Maine governor's holiday celebration right in Alma's backyard. While they initially spar, romantic sparks soon begin to fly between the two women as the enchanting tree and some Christmas fairy dust from the town's... I really wanted to get through the fairy dust from the town's patissier extraordinaire, Ricky Lake, bring out the best in them and spark each other to take leaps of faith and and fight for love and Christmas magic. Should I do that again?
No, leave it exactly as it is.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
I feel like I would not trust a podcast that got through that whole description being like, that's a normal thing to say. Like,
it's so true. I want to put that through like 5 rounds of edits, by the way, what I just read.
It's like so much worse than I even realized. Everyone should have to read their work out loud before publishing it.
It's so true.
That's the thing. So this was like, as a playwriting major in college. And so everything had to be speakable was like the like lesson of writing. So like reading it out loud is like, I'm totally with you. It's like,
That's so
totally
interesting.
Critical. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, I didn't know you were a playwriting major. And with that in mind, I feel like you're going to bring an extra level to this of like how a nine act, all these are nine acts, a nine act structure.
Guys, I got some punch up on Christmas. At the... No, I don't.
I'm sure like any of us could turn that into a whatever. We're getting ahead of ourselves.
The old nine act structure. Okay. The next movie is The Syed Family Xmas Eve Game Night. The Syed Family Xmas Eve Game Night follows Noor, a queer Pakistani Muslim woman who brings her Puerto Rican girlfriend home for the first time on the family's annual game night, which happens to fall on Christmas Eve. All cards are on the table when Noor's eldest sister unexpectedly shows up, sending the night into chaos and putting all their relationships to the test. The short film explores themes of sisterhood, belonging, and breaking the rules of tradition. And the bonus movie is When Harry Met Santa, which was produced to mark 50 years since the decriminalization of homosexuality in Norway. We will include links to all of these. Some of them, like, you will have to pay for. Some of them are... I think the Lifetime one is streaming. Whatever. We'll have links in the show notes.
If the end of this you are motivated to watch any of these, we will have instructions on how you can. Again, yeah. Our hope is that you're going to want to watch one of them. Will it be the one that's easy to watch? We'll find out.
Good. I like that. We have like a little built-in cliffhanger. Okay, so that is what we're dealing with here. I think maybe why don't we just like go around and movie by movie, we'll just talk about kind of overall impressions, if that sounds okay to you both.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas at the Ranch, Aubrey, do you want to kick us off?
Or
you don't like have to go first.
You're putting her on.
No, it's fine. Oh, Bud was like, ooh, this movie, not how dare you. Okay. Christmas at the Ranch was rough, man. I got like 2/3 of the way in, sort of like trying to find like, well, that part was, I like that part. What is it? And it just, I ran out of steam. I so deeply hate to say it, but I ran out of steam. There's a bunch of stuff in this movie. I would say sort of top line thing for me was that it was really a reminder of like how low budget so much of this stuff can be. Like they recorded in a bunch of rooms that had very clearly just been decorated with like, you know, sort of whatever furniture was rentable or gettable sort of on a quick turnaround. They would have like 2 things hanging on the walls, but not like 10 things. There were no rugs in the rooms. So a lot of the dialogue was kind of echoey because there wasn't anything to absorb. Right. So it was just like a lot of stuff like that, that were just like a ton of little tiny reminders of like, we didn't have rug money. And again, that's not about the film itself, right? That's again, like more about funding and financing. The stuff about the film itself is also a little iffy for me. There was a bunch of stuff in this film that like, I'm pretty big on like willing suspension of disbelief. Like, let's go in, accept the world we're in, all that kind of stuff. And there was still stuff here that sort of stuck out to me. Like 2 main characters end up on a date. They both sort of assume other identities and lie about what they do and who they are. And I could not for the life of me figure out why that happened. I also could not for the life of me understand why they would agree to a date in like 30 minutes if neither of them had, like, I just wouldn't, if you couldn't get ready, if you didn't feel like you were like looking or feeling your best, why would you go on a date? I don't know. So it just felt like there was a lot of stuff that like just didn't totally hold together for me. And then the last thing I would say about this one is the family business is at stake. Spoiler, the family business is at stake. And I think the thing that I realized about this movie was, well, first of all, the escape from that situation is illuminated for you in like the first like 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be the route out. This lady has potentially access to a bunch of free money coming her way. Wouldn't that be great? But she doesn't realize that until like the last 10 minutes, which seemed odd. And I started to imagine, like, I actually think you could make this whole movie without the family businesses at stake. Just a queer person having a hard time going home for the holidays, which is not an uncommon thing. Mm-hmm. Right. And just have that be the plot line.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I got hung up on this one. I so wanted it to be more polished than it was, is what I would say.
I think if the plot had been better, it would have been easier to forgive the lack of rugs and the fact that like Kate was wearing a bandana that like just came from Party City. Like, it was like you could see how crisp it was. But the plot just didn't make sense in ways that like it was like choices were made here that like you could have just made different choices. It wasn't like a clear constraint of like, well, they backed themselves into a corner with this plot. It's like, no, you just opted. Again, like, why did they assume fake identities on this first date? Like, that doesn't make sense, and then created unnecessary conflict in a way that didn't even make sense in like a rom-com or a romance universe. It just was weird.
The thing is also that in this movie, like in the time-honored tradition of like kind of flirty banter where like the two people who you know are going to fall in love start out being at odds, they kind of seem to actually hate each other. Like,
they like tried to do that, but it did not.
No,
land.
It didn't. Like, Kate, so the two, like, the leads are, well, are they leads? Yeah, I guess they are, Kate and Haley. And Kate is like pretty mean. She's like pretty awful. And Haley isn't bringing like a huge amount to the table either. And it's like, it's very hard to pull off the, and then they fall in love when they seem to actually totally like loathe one another, which is kind of how I felt for most of this.
And it felt like the loathing also felt unearned to me. Like, Kate had never met Haley ever, but like one of our opening scenes is Kate like talking to herself in a barn, being
the
like
talking to her herself
with her big city job, and she just thinks she's too big for this. And I was just like, I don't think I've ever taken on a job and had that much resentment of someone who didn't do the job that I now have.
Right.
Like, I just have never had feelings that big about that. And it didn't make sense to me about like, where did those come from? You know what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah.
Also the talking to herself, I just like, that was such a weird thing. It was just like, okay, so we don't have voiceover money or something, but like, this isn't a play where the people have to talk out loud. Like, why couldn't she have just been talking to another character? Like, and again, like, again, not enough money for another actor, but like, she's talking to a horse and then it's like, oh gosh, I'm such a freak, I'm just here talking to a horse. And it's like, acknowledging it doesn't make it okay.
Right,
like,
I know.
Why is this? It was so strange. And that was in the first like 10 minutes maybe. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, oh no, this is not, uh-oh, this is off to a weak start.
Unless that horse starts talking back.
Now that would have been Christmas magic.
That's a whole other movie that I'm psyched about.
Listen.
What's interesting about Christmas at the Ranch is that I feel like it's a throwback to when there were a lot of low budget movies that were really bad. And like, maybe there still are, and I just don't know about them. But my theory is that like, with the internet and social media and an iPhone, like, thanks to the internet, you can probably, there's probably a YouTube video about like how to make a pretty decent movie. And if you have an iPhone and like a tripod, you can probably just like do it. You can get like Filmmaking for Dummies. Like, whereas like, I feel like maybe 30 years ago, people were like, I don't really know anything about making movies. We don't really have nice equipment, but like, I don't know. You probably just get a camera and you press record and then you do it. And the result would be something really low budget. There are no rugs. The writing wasn't that good. The acting wasn't that good, but like, it was the best you could do. And I'm like inventing a reality here that I can't back up. But like my thing is like, it's shocking to me that you could make something that misses the mark in as many ways as this misses the mark, like in the year of our Lord 2021.
It's so far off in a way. And like this director has also directed multiple movies before, so that doesn't really make sense. It's just, it's so, every bit of it is just like, why did you do that? I feel like we're not like making it clear enough to listeners. Like this movie was so bad. It was like draining. By the end of it, it was just like, I don't think I'll ever feel happiness again. Like there's no joy in it. It's like, it's like anti-charisma. It's like so bizarrely bad. Like it's bad, not good, bad, just not fun, not joyful. The low budgetness really does have to be restated because that is a huge part of it. But I think you see it the most in like the script. The script just is not, and the pacing is so bad. Like it is not, it just is so slow in this way that it's like, get on with it. We all know how this is going to go. So it has to be a fun ride as we get there. And it was not a fun ride.
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, we'll get there. I was going to say, I think one of the other films that we're going to talk about, the Syed family Christmas, Xmas game night, was like, I actually think one of the big things that it had going for it was its length, right?
Yes.
Because
all killer, no filler. They just like, I wanted more, which is a great problem to have.
Totally. Like, it feels like part of the challenge of this genre is you don't even really have to see a whole Christmas movie to sort of get the structure. You can get about 10 minutes in and be like, oh, right, cool. So they're going to save the train station. They're going to get the family business out of trouble. And then these two are going to get together. And then it's going to seem like they're going to break up. And then they're going to get back together. Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That's not to poo-poo any of that, but like you got to do things then to keep that format interesting. Mm-hmm. And it felt like this one just didn't do things to keep that format interesting, at least not for me personally.
No, not for me. One of the things that stuck out to me is the first moment where it's like the movie is acknowledging that these two are going to, like, they're getting along now and they're flirting, was all done entirely via a montage. And I feel like that is a dead giveaway that the thing you are watching is not good. If you are like showing me they're having a great time, but you can't even write the witty banter that you can allow us to hear it, you have to like just show us what they're doing on screen. And that's, this movie had that problem. And it just is like, I don't know, this lives or dies by like the chemistry of the actors and the banter and like making it feel like a fantasy. And it just didn't. It just felt like, I don't care about these people.
Yeah, it feels like the lack of chemistry feels like a little bit of a through line through at least the first two that we're gonna talk about. For me, was just sort of like, oh, the next one has more going for it, I would, in my own estimation, yeah, considerably. But there was still this sort of like not all the way there chemistry that felt like, I don't know, it felt like in some cases the words were right, in some cases the words were wrong that the actors were saying, right? But it was sort of missing that like spark or interest, or the like, both of them felt like they missed out on like the anxiety a little bit of being like, is this actually a queer person?
Mm-hmm. Thank right? you.
Which always feels like there are some stakes to that, mm-hmm, that got bypassed, where I'm like, that's interesting, but we're not doing that. Here, right.
Yeah.
But it just felt like there was this sort of like, I appreciate, Rachel, the intro that you gave. And also now I want to go find like a tome that's like the history of Hallmark movies, because that was like a real mind blower, because it feels like there is this sort of like overriding sort of chasteness, mm-hmm, to a lot of these movies that also ends up being a straightness to, mm-hmm, a lot of these movies, which ends, mm-hmm, up being a discomfort with like queer intimacy and queer, yep, sexuality, right? Mm-hmm. That for the listener, Sally is like silently like going to church.
I'm like witnessing, because you're saying all the things about that. Like, I couldn't agree more. I feel like maybe we should like segue to Under the Christmas Tree to talk about some of this stuff, if you guys feel ready for it.
Yeah, I actually don't even want to. Actually, I want to say one more thing about this movie before we move on, which is that this movie felt like a porn without the fucking, like, there, when they were finally in, it's like the snowstorm and Haley's gonna have to stay there. I was just like, okay, like we're getting closer. can we just, and I had this moment, I was like, what if it just like cut to like, all of a sudden we just cut to like the like horniest,
scissoring,
most like, yes, like most obnoxious, like, because, and I was like, that would be better than this. But it also just was like, this is the most exposition for a porn I've ever seen. Cause like, that's kind of the level of like quality and acting is like stereotypical porn where you're just like, there's nothing here. We're all like, we all know what we're here for. In this case, it's like, we're all here because it's gay. That's the only reason that we're here. We wouldn't be giving this the time of day otherwise. And like, that's the like reason we have to talk about this movie, because it's like, this is the offering right now. It's like so bad, we're going to suffer through it, because like, there's not that many movies that are queer women to choose from.
I will say one thing that I appreciated immensely about that scene was that the ranch hand has camo print sheets.
Okay. I'm so glad you said that, because I was texting about this with Rachel and her girlfriend, and I was like, did you notice the sheets? They're not just camo, they're like the hunter camo.
Yeah,
they're like, it's not camo like when you go to Target and they have like camo sweatpants. It's like the hunter camo when like you're going to be out in the woods hunting and you need to actually blend in. That was amazing. I didn't know what to make of it. It was like such a weird choice. And I have to say that like, I can be like a pretty unsophisticated viewer in that I notice really obvious things. I'm like, oh, that movie was really loud, or that actor really sure did have blonde hair. But like, I don't often notice like set dressing and like details, production design. But I will say that in this movie, I did notice the thing you pointed out, which is that you could tell that like, someone had just like put a couple things on the wall, put a couple things here and there. And it didn't even, they looked like they put things on the wall the way I do, where I'm like, I don't really have the right like nail for this. I'm just gonna like use a thumbtack or something. That's kind of how it looked. I mean, I think the hard thing about this movie is that it's hard to like have a conversation about anything other than its flaws and its faults, because there's just really not that much there. Mm-mm. However, I'll use that to transition to Under the Christmas Tree, where I think there is more there. And I think the conversation, even about where it misses the mark, it is more interesting than the ways in which Christmas at the Ranch misses the mark.
I think that's right. So, all right, let's do first impressions of Under the Christmas Tree. Aubrey, you want to go first?
Okay. I like this one more. I think it still like misses the mark in some ways, but there was more there to like enjoy. It didn't feel like as much of a sort of trudge as Christmas at the Ranch did. I adore Enrico Colantoni, who's the like guy who plays the dad in this, who is like,
he's
canonically
really likable,
the dad to like queer coded ladies, even if they're not like Veronica Mars, like my heart, canonically queer.
Yes.
Like, he's a fucking joy. Ooh, excuse me. He's a joy.
No, I've already said fucking. Go for it.
I said scissoring, so.
Hallmark could have something to say about that.
I like Ricky Lake is a complex character, but I totally love Ricky Lake. Like, I really enjoyed a lot about this movie. I appreciated that the stakes seemed actually like right-sized for the movie. That like the stakes in the first, what is it, like 3 of the 9 acts or whatever were like a gingerbread house building contest. Yep. And I was like, that's right, Christmas movie, stay here.
Yep.
But then surprise, the family business is at risk. So we got to go back to that, right? Yeah, I did not dislike this one. I will say there is one thing that I was very delighted by in this movie for its like deep, bold inaccuracy, which was like one of the central premises of the conflict in this movie is the governor needs a Christmas tree or their reelection campaign is sunk. And like, set in Maine, I live in Oregon. Those are the two least church-going states in the union. So like, even if you were in a state where that mattered, Maine is not that state, right? Like, I was just overjoyed at the thought that, like, they would just be, like, hemorrhaging voters at the right Christmas tree, or it wasn't there in time or whatever. I was like, this is a real treat for me.
That is so funny. I didn't even notice that. But even hearing you say the re-election campaign was, like, hinging on that, I was like, that's ridiculous. But for some reason, yeah, when it was presented to me in the movie, I was like, yeah, okay, checks
yeah
out.
Yeah, listen, yeah, the governor needs a Christmas tree. We've all been hey there.
Right. And this is a full-time, year-round job, apparently, is yeah to be the Christmas tree finder. This is the first movie of any of them, last year included, that I was like, oh, I understand why people like these movies. Like, I had this thought of, like, I wonder what, like, the best of the street movies is. Like, if a big fan could point me to one that's like, this is actually really good, like, watch this one to get a sense of this genre and you'll see. I'm not going to fuck with that. But, like, this did that for me, where I was like, oh, this is, like, it's first of all, the pacing, it just, like, clips along. It could be a little, like, tighter, but whatever. But, like, on the whole, it clips along. The dialogue is fun. They don't have as much chemistry, but, like, they on their own are charismatic enough. And the side characters are charismatic and fun to watch. So it's like, I'm on this ride and I'm enjoying it. And I think they do you can see where the money went. Like, you can see the budget. And it's like, still everything is too fresh and new and sanitary, but in a way that I found, like, satisfying. Like, I was flipping through a Christmas catalog where it's like, this isn't real. I don't think that this store has been here for 40 years or whatever it's supposed to be, but, like, I don't care as much because I like the way it looks. It's, like, very like, it's very modern and nice and beautiful while still sort of being, like, vaguely nostalgic for something. So I think that they did a good job of, like, just, like, setting the scene with, like, beautiful Christmas things, which I think is a big part of the point here. And so doing that took them a long way.
Yeah, I think that, like, what I was saying to you, Rachel, was that, like, before, because I watched, first of all, I made the mistake of watching this before Christmas at the Ranch, and I think I would have liked and appreciated this more if I had watched Christmas at the Ranch first. But my impression of this was that, like, the Christmassiness, like what you were saying about the Hallmark movies, how, like, there needs to be more Christmas, you can never end with Christmas. This movie, it felt like I was being held hostage, and in the room where I was being kept, Christmas songs are playing. I was being forced to ice Christmas cookies, mm-hmm, and I was doing it all under a Christmas tree and, like, you know, while, like, Santa and his elves, like, were outside. Like, it was, mm-hmm, it felt very, very Christmassy to, mm-hmm, where, and this is one of those things that made me sort of think about what, like, people who celebrate Christmas need from the season versus, like, what the rest of us, like, need or expect from the season. Like, it would seem to me like you can have too much of a good thing. Like, you know what I mean? And for me, I was like, I have a stomach ache. This is, like, too much Christmas. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm, it also felt like the reliance on, like, so like the family business is a Christmas, like, ornament store, or like a Christmas, it's like decor.
A year round Christmas store.
And the main character, her whole deal is that she loves Christmas. In fact, like, the Ricky Lake character says, like, I'm a nerd about baking and Alma's a nerd about Christmas. And I was like, that's not, like, a category.
That's not a thing.
But no. Like, and so, like, it's just like, it's like, I feel like I can hear the network executive that was like, no, we need 100 times more Christmas. It's not enough. And then they were like, okay, fine. It's not a train station that they work at. It's a store that sells Christmas decor. And the person who runs it, the daughter isn't, like, into trains. She's into Christmas. Like, that's her thing. You know, it just felt like a lot. Other quick notes I want to say. Similarly, Enrico Colantoni is, like, always a delight. Like, the dad in Veronica Mars, totally iconic dad. He's the cool dad, but, like, in a legitimately cool kind way. Mm-hmm. I live for him. Ricky Lake was wearing a wig that whoever
none of these movies have wig money.
Whoever no wig money. Whoever put her in that wig should be, like, made to, like, pay a debt to society, because Ricky Lake doesn't need to be in. What, let me not get into, like, it's not about needing to wear, it was a really bad wig. And they were trying to, like, make her the same age as the, like, 28-year-old main character, which was, like, a weird choice. And then my only other note is that, like, chemistry-wise, when I first watched it, I was like, I don't feel like they really have that much chemistry. But then I watched the Christmas Ranch movie and I was like, oh, they they have as much chemistry as Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly. Like, you know what I mean? That, because when you compare it, you sort of realize that they're working with a little bit more. So yeah, I don't know. I feel like I agree with you, Rachel. I think that like this is a movie that helps you understand why people like these kinds of movies. I think it was like too Christmassy and not gay enough. Like I need it to be queerer and less Christmassy, personally.
I think with this genre, that's a tall order. Like that's the whole point, is barely gay and extremely Christmassy. And this felt subversive in after watching a bunch of these movies, because they actually talked about being gay, which I want to talk about. But I came to this one after watching Christmas at the Ranch, and I was like, this is the best movie I've ever seen in my life. I'm going to watch this every Christmas. I'm going to show this to my children. Like, I love it. And I like fully admit that's probably because it's like, because of where I was coming from. It was like, you know, which is just on my like metaphorical deathbed, because Christmas at the Ranch just really ruined my life. But again, like it hit that sort of sweet spot of like Sally gave you a stomachache, and I'm like, I think I got the exact amount of like the right dose of, you know, gingerbread and hot chocolate that this is working for me. And I think it's just because it many of these movies are probably considered aspirational, and I don't know if that's quite the right word or if that's really true, but there is some sort of like wish fulfillment fantasy. This movie felt like playing with a dollhouse. Like it hit that spot of like, this is a little universe that's not real. The main character is a tree whisperer. Like, that's how they describe her. Like, this is so... She's using drones to find the best Christmas tree for the governor so the governor doesn't lose the re-election campaign. Like, this is wild. This is nonsense. But I think it just hit my brain in the right place at the right time that I was like, I don't care. They look good. This is pretty. And, like, that worked for me. So that was my, like, okay, I can see why this works for people, even if... it's, like, if this is the best we can do, and it's not, because the next movie is much better, but, like... Mainstream wise, this is so much better than Single All the Way on Netflix, which is the movie that everyone's going to watch because it's on Netflix and it's getting a ton of buzz. And I felt like this one was just way better in multiple ways. And so I'm kind of bummed that Single All the Way is the one on Netflix, because I thought it was really bad. it has a lot of the same problems, but like worse writing, less chemistry, more inexplicable sponsorship from TaskRabbit throughout as a plot point. Like, Single All the Way is bizarre. Like, Jennifer Coolidge can't save this movie. It's so strange. Whereas this one, I was like, this is like, yeah, fine. It's cheesy. Like, of course it is. But like, I can work with this.
Yeah, I will say, I think I'm on the same page as you, Rachel, because I watched Christmas at the Ranch first and this one second. And I feel like most of my notes from this one, like, are reflective of like just a light dusting of Stockholm syndrome, which like it's better than the last one.
Christmas buried us. Yeah.
Yeah, from the whatever small town patisserie. Great.
Patisserie. Yeah. Ricky like the patisserie area, and I don't even know how they described her. Also, a thing that bugs me about a lot of these movies, and I think that Happiest Season had going for it, is that Happiest Season like had more than just the two queer characters. They also had queer friends. And when you don't have that, it just doesn't feel true to life. And I wish they had just made the Ricky Lake character queer, because like, we don't know either way, but they don't like make, I think they would have said so if that were the case. And that would help explain the age difference between them that they're sort of trying to compensate for. And it's like, totally fine. You can have friends of different ages. You don't need to be like, that's fine. But it would make even more sense if you are two of the only queer people in this small main town. And like, you just are buddies. And like, that's nice. Like, that would have been a nice thing that I think this movie could have done really seamlessly and elegantly. And I wish they had made that choice. Like, give us more queer people than just the two, because it's really frustrating to watch a movie about queer people where they're just surrounded by straight people who have too many opinions.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's also like not uncommon for, well, first of all, hang on, I'm gonna step it back. One, I did Google image search more recent pictures of Ricky Lake without a wig on. She has a killer, like, salt and pepper picture.
Yes, she looks great. And I was like,
make this the lesbian patissiere.
Yeah.
Close down. Please. Come on. And also, I think it's not uncommon for queer people of any range of, like, sexual orientations and gender identities and gender expressions to find someone who's like 20 or 30 years their senior to sort of like act as some kind of like queer, like parental figure or like guide through the community or whatever. So like, it doesn't make sense in this like format that has historically been defined by like very straight plot lines and conventions. But like, if you're making something for queer people to watch, it feels like, I don't really know many queer people who would bat an eye at like, wait a minute, she's got a friend who's 20 years older than her or 30 years older than her. What? Like, that feels like a normal, that feels like a normal thing to me.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you hit on something, which is that, like, if this is for queer people, and I'm not sure that it is, that kind of, like, remains to be seen. But it has this feeling of, like, well, if she's queer and she's queer, they can't be friends. Like, they'd have to get together. And it's like, that's actually not the case. That's, like, that's what's, you're missing the point here. And it's such a bummer, because that's such a small thing that would have, like, cost this movie nothing, that would have made it feel more true to life, and like just a tiny thing like that. And it's a bummer to see the opposite choice be made when the like more true to life choice would just be like, would pay off like tenfold.
I will say the one scene from this that I will absolutely return to in isolation from the rest of the movie, just to have a moment with it, is their employee Christmas party, their like company Christmas party, where for some reason they are playing the Nutcracker theme, but with like Boots and Cats style like beatboxing underneath it. So they're like, it's cool and modern now.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, where you're like, oh yeah. No, buds. No. That's not, just play the Nutcracker or just play other Christmas music. But I have a feeling they could probably not have budget for other Christmas music.
Techno Nutcracker it is.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think like you and like everything that the two of you just said, like, I think really crystallizes what bothered me about this movie and what bothers me about a lot of like lighter queer fare, which is that there's like the thing of like, you can only show queer characters when they're in turmoil about coming out and their relationships are tragic and they end in divorce or death or whatever. Or you can only show queer characters when they're basically straight. Like they're basically, they're so assimilated to heterosexuality and there's nothing subversive about their relationships. And I feel like neither of those depictions feels particularly satisfying. And it would be great if there could be something that holds the complexity of the thing of like seeing this other femme woman in a small town and like wondering if they're queer and like not really knowing, which you said, Aubrey, that is like, that isn't like a dirty secret that like the queer, that like queer people want to like cleanse ourselves of. That's like kind of like a big part of like many people's experience as queer people. And like in Under the Christmas Tree, the family is like so seamlessly into like their gay kid and their kid's like gay romance that it feels sanitized. And again, like the movie doesn't have to be about like the kid, like this adult child isn't welcome at home because she's like wants to date. It doesn't have to be that, but there's something that felt so like antiseptic about the queerness and queer like intimacy, Aubrey, which you mentioned, like, and obviously this is a Lifetime movie. So the project is to present something that is sanitized and that feels very, that like goes down easy and like isn't too challenging. So, you know, I think the movie like achieves, like it does what it sets out to do, but it's like the project that I'm not into. And, you know, in the 90s and in the early 2000s, there were all of these like really low budget queer movies that like, I'm familiar with the ones made by like queer women. I'm sure there are queer dudes making things too, but I wasn't paying attention. And all those movies were really low budget. Sometimes they were really hard to watch because of like how just kind of rough they were and how oftentimes like they felt like student films or whatever. But I felt like there was an attempt to tell stories about queer people's real lives. And I don't mean like because it was gritty and there was like, you know, all these terrible things happening to them, but there were just like the complexities of like, what it means to be queer and like the extent to which like being queer is like kind of subversive in and of itself, or at least used to be thought of that way. Like those movies could be very hard to watch, but they were like, I just think exploring interesting territory. And again, like to compare like some low budget indie movie that like some like art school dyke made in like 1997 to like comparing that to a 2021 movie with Ricky Lake on Lifetime is not really fair. So I'm not really saying one's better than the other, but I think like one is like something I'm more interested in and I want to exist in the world. And the other one is like not as much for me. And even like I get kind of like assed up about it too.
Yeah, I think you, like you said, the whole project is this thing that is like, it's just like a straight movie, but we're going to swap the people out so that it's not. And like, that's, I don't know. I don't know who their target audience is. I after watching Single All the Way, I was like, I think I would maybe show this to like a child or a tween. Like, I think I would like, that's the level of like, it's like so sort of pointless and sanded off it. Like, it doesn't offer a lot to me. Or like as an adult, but like I would like show it to a kid who's watching a bunch of like shit that's not very good so that they could see a different type of romance. And like, but like that's it just feels very juvenile and like basic in this way that it's like, I know that with a lot of these queer people were involved, but like it doesn't feel like it. But then I'm just like, yeah, but which queer people are like getting a job writing these movies? It's not the ones who are trying to do something subversive. But it bums me out that like the two options are like totally sanitized. We're literally just like straight people and trauma and, you know, you can't go home, like that there's no other option. And that just doesn't, that's just not true to life for starters. But like it also doesn't make for very good entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I'm thinking of as we're talking about this, I do feel sort of hung up on this question of like, who's the audience? And it really feels like, I feel like, Rachel, you just hit the nail on the head, which is sort of like, it feels like maybe for straight parents who want to raise their kids in a sort of quote unquote inclusive way might be the audience. I had a long conversation with a couple of friends about this and then with my mom about this. That was about a couple years ago. We got a little mini wave of movies that were about like conversion therapy, about like ex-gay conversion therapy. And I had straight people in my life being like, have you seen this? It's amazing. You should see this movie, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, I'm good. Mm-hmm. I could take a pass on that. and the conversation that I had with them was essentially like, that's for you. That's for you to understand this thing that hasn't really been a real sort of specter in your life in the way that it is for a lot of queer people or people in our communities or what have you. Right. And this one felt a little bit like that, where I was like, oh, I don't think this is actually for me. And that's fine. Not everything has to be for me. But it was sort of, it felt unclear to me until you said that, Rachel, like sort of who this was for. And I mm-hmm. think that's it. It's for like straight families that would take their kids to Pride.
Yes.
To be like, look at how inclusive, look at gay people. Here we are. Everybody's fine.
And I think there's a way to do both, actually, that like it can be, we know that the audience for this is going to, like, we know our audience is mostly straight people, but we want to bring in a queer audience too. I think you can do both things. I think Happiest Season did that. I don't think it was ultimately that good. And I think a lot of queer people agree, but like, I think it like had the right balance of like people you recognize and like big names and like that kind of, I think that goes a long way, but there was also a truth to it. Again, that movie just has so many problems, but I do think it got closer and I would like to see a little bit more of that where it's like, we are doing two things at once and we're going to take the time to try to do a better job of it. But this actually brings me to the question or like the point of this movie just sort of shocked me because I found it surprising that the characters actually talked about being gay in the movie in a way that I was like, this is how I think, this is how we, my friends and I talk to each other. Like we're not like whispering gay. And that's how it feels like these other movies are. It's this attempt to like assimilate so much of like, well, yeah, they're just straight. They're like everybody, or they're gay, but they're like everybody else. And this, it was like it starts off with when the dad says, do you think she's gay? And I was like, oh wow, he said gay. And then her being like, obviously she is. And I was like, okay, all right. I'm listening. And then a bit later after they, spoiler alert, win the gingerbread contest, like they're, they, I actually didn't think that was going to happen.
Rachel, how dare you? Kind of you're ruining this movie for so many people.
I know, I'm sorry. I didn't think they were going to win because they shouldn't have won because it's like a fucked up judging system, but like that's not the point. But like, so they're celebrating the win with Glog, which is a Christmas drink apparently. And the dad's like, should we toast it, you know, to gingerbread or whatever, and almost like, no, to lesbians. And I was like, oh my God, she just cheers to lesbians. And it felt like true to life in a way that I was like, are you just trying to give us a gif? All right, I'll take it because we need them. But like, I found it surprising. I liked it. I don't want to spoil the joke in one of the scenes because it, like, if anyone's going to watch it, I feel like it is worth experiencing without any warning. But it was the like, I was like, oh, did this just get past the censors because they don't know what this means and what this joke is? But that one like really took me out of a like, oh, okay, this is what we're talking about. When we're talking about like how queer people talk to each other and what intimacy and flirting actually looks like, this is it. And it was like, that one was like very just, again, I keep using the word shocking because I was like, in this universe, I didn't know that gay sex existed actually.
Right. I had like a different reaction to the lesbians toast, which is that I thought it felt like, I don't know what I thought it was. I wrote in our doc, like, cheers to queers, like greater than symbol to the lesbians, because I feel like cheers to queers is a thing that like I have actually heard people say and have said. Right. I can see saying like to the lesbians as like a tongue in cheek kind of a thing, but that was a moment where I actually felt like more, I was like, they're trying to do something here, but I don't know what, which is not to say that like I had the right reading of it and you didn't. I think it's interesting that we had different readings of it, but I think that like what it kind of points to is that like, it's, I think, really hard to make a movie about a queer romance that's going to feel like it does. It's doing something kind of like authentic and representative when it's like a Lifetime movie, basically. I you know what I mean? Like
Never. And also like a bunch, we should talk more about this, but like a bunch of headlines are like, finally the representation we've been waiting for. And it's like, this is not representation. Like that is just so like, that is such an absurd frame. And like, there's a lot of like the movie we needed. And it's like, it's not, none of these are. And the representation here is like a complete misdirect. That's just not true. But Aubrey, what was your read of to the lesbians or two lesbians?
Oh, I feel like I have a third read on to lesbians or to the lesbians. I was watching that and thinking, you know, my parents have sort of come around to being quite supportive. My mom is now the person who will be like, hey, watch it, my daughter's gay. Like she's like that kind of mom, right? Where you're like, yes, good, keep it up. Even in my like pretty supportive, pretty down family, I struggled to imagine a to the lesbians toast. That's not, my family's not every family, but I just felt sort of like,
I'm with you.
You know what I mean? I just sort of, I felt a little bit like, I don't know what family this happens in, but it is definitely not mine.
Right.
Even with all its supportiveness, even with like coastal city family, the whole bit, I was sort of like, this feels like just not quite, it just hit a little off kilter, a little off center for me.
I think that's right.
Yeah, didn't totally land for me. And I had a similar response to Sally, which was just like, I'm not sure what that was intended to do. I couldn't quite figure out sort of like what the aim of it was.
I think it rings more true to me if I like, you forget that the parents are there. Like if they had, you know what I mean? Like that sounds like a thing that they would have said, like Alma and Charlie would have said to each other.
Yeah.
Like, in front of family. Weird, but okay. But there were also like in the, when they like have the after hours dinner and the patisserie or whatever, there's they're talking about White Christmas and Charlie's like, or I think Alma's like, yeah, it was watching White Christmas. I had my like first queer, like, sexual awakening. And then she's like, so White Christmas made you gay? And I was like, this is, I don't know how to feel about it. I just am like, I am now aware that this exists. And it is interesting because I was not expecting a conversation like that. And like, again, these conversations are like so basic that it feels a bit wild to be like, wow, can you believe that this is what they're talking about? But it does in this universe to me.
Well, and it feels like they didn't use this language because it would you know, it's not exactly like welcoming language if you're not in the community and pretty rooted in the community. But essentially, they're having the like, what's your root conversation? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, let's do that. Look at this. Yeah. Okay.
But also her root is Christmas, which like it makes sense, right, but is also like, all right, this is how this is going to go. It's ridiculous.
Let's move on to the next one, which is the Syed Family Xmas Eve Game Night, which is an 11-minute film. Top line thoughts. Rachel, why don't you kick us off this time?
From the get-go, I was like, I am so bummed this is only 11 minutes long. I want to keep watching this. And it felt like, not like quite like a trailer, but like a sizzle reel of like what a full-length version of this would. You could see all of the like extra characters being like very funny. And I'm like, I want a B plot with these characters. I just wanted to spend more time with them. It just is the best one, hands down, on multiple levels. I think that this writing was strong enough to sustain a longer thing, but I also appreciate that they, you know, again, like they kept it right sized and didn't, I don't know. It's nice to, under promise over deliver, I guess would be the way to think about it. Like it just was so, I don't know. It's great that we wanted more of it. That did not happen with the others. It was mm-hmm. like just, I mean, first of all, like this is like an entirely cast of people of color. So that sets it apart from everything else we watch. And it didn't feel like we're people of color, but like in the way that like a black Barbie doll is just like the other Barbie dolls, but like just mm-hmm. as brown. Like it didn't feel like that. Like it felt like, oh, this is a family like who is just, I don't like you just couldn't separate that in this movie. And I really appreciated that. It was funny. It was like messier. It was just like the central tension is not the two leads and their romance. They're good. They're together. It's the older sister in the family showing up for this game night unexpected. And like, how would you guys describe the older sister? Like, what's her whole deal?
Ooh, I would say glamorous and judgy, mm-hmm. kind of catty. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like a little bit of a catty vibe, but sort mm-hmm. of. In the way that like people in families often think they can 100%. Say more than like other people are necessarily comfortable with in that same family.
Yeah, I think that's completely yeah. right. Sally, what did you think?
This is also, yeah, I really liked it. This is also the only movie where you see a gender nonconforming mm-hmm. queer person, mm-hmm. which I felt delighted about. So, like you said, it's the only movie that didn't have white people in it, which I also felt delighted about. It's the only movie where Christmas is kind of like incidental. Mm-hmm. But it still feels very holiday-y because they're gathering on Christmas Eve, which is obviously like a tradition in their family. I really appreciated all of those things. It also, all of the characters felt like real people to me, mm-hmm. even though you only, a couple of them like don't have any lines or have two or three lines, which is something that like, you know, the other movies I don't think achieved even with like much, much, much more time. And I think that this movie actually like did a better job at sort of presenting some of these like complexities. Like, you know, one of the very first things that happens is that Noir and Luce show up and it's right in the middle of, seems like some sort of a, well, not charades because you don't talk in charades, but they walk in and one of the sisters is describing someone who's butch. She's saying like, she's really, really gay. She's really, really butch and doesn't realize that her sister and the sister's partner who is kind of mask, we don't really know a lot about how they identify, which is another thing I really liked about the movie. They didn't like make a whole thing of it. Mm-hmm. And it's like this embarrassing thing. And then she apologizes to the sister and it's like, but it's like, yeah, like this might get complicated, but it's also fine. Like, and then they deal with it. They talk about it. There's an apology. It's fine. It's no big deal. The sister didn't mean anything by it. It was not a specific, like, and there are a couple moments like that, that feel like we're just allowed to see the messiness. And anytime you're portraying families, especially at the holidays, and you're not portraying messiness, it's like, what are we really doing here? And so the fact that we're allowed to see some of that messiness, specifically as it relates to like gender and sexuality, without it being this like huge tragic thing or the focus of the movie, I love, I appreciate. And I thought it was done with a really light touch and they managed to do it in 11 minutes. So that was my take. Aubrey, what about you?
Yeah, I would echo everything that both of you said and also say, I feel like this really actually did something that the other two movies that we've talked about so far didn't do, which is harness an incredibly natural tension, which is bringing somebody home for the holidays, period, is like a tense thing for everyone involved. Even if it goes great, even if you feel good about it going in, there is a challenge to fitting into another family's like decades long traditions and to figuring out sort of how the family members relate to each other and how you can fit in with that without sort of inserting yourself too much. All of that stuff felt just like really refreshing to have something that felt still very like sort of light and fizzy and holiday-y, right? It wasn't heavy at all, but that felt more like related to something that I and other people that I know have sort of like been through on some level, right? Also just sort of the like ambient anxiety of like, is there a test and am I passing it in this family, right? Was just like, I was like, this is all good. Look at you. This is all good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really, really enjoyed it. And I totally could have had, like, if that were, it was 11 minutes. Is that right? If that thing were 30 minutes, I would be so happy. If we got to see who that older sister was dating, like who had she brought home at some point,
right?
Or who was she specifically not bringing home? Like, I was just like, there's more here. And it seems really delightful to me. And
I would watch a sitcom about this family.
Yes.
Like, I want to spend more time with them, but in like these small bites is the right format, I think.
Also, they did the thing that I genuinely appreciated, which is like a thing that happens, certainly has happened in my like supportive family, is that there is always one person who, when you talk about a gay person or a gay person's partner, goes, you know, one time I had a little thing with somebody. Like, God damn
that was
it.
So fucking funny. That was so funny.
There's always somebody who's like,
yeah,
you might not have guessed this about me, but let me key you into something. Right? Like, it's fine. It's whatever.
It's a huge reveal.
Yeah.
Now just awkward, but that's fine.
Yeah.
That felt, again, like really true to life and like a natural low stakes sort of tension, right?
Yeah.
To harness. I thought it was just great. I really was super into it.
Yeah. I feel like the Nora and then the eldest sister, who's like the judgy one, had the most chemistry ultimately. And I think that's like, that's the central relationship in this movie, not the couple. And so the fact that they had the chemistry to carry it, and like the way that Noor was just like so tense around her sister and was just like so over it and so on edge felt so true. And like the way they talked to each other, I was just like, this is exactly it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, like, as a person of many sibling experience, the fact that like we're seeing a sibling relationship, you know, again, with like some complexity where there's like a lot of like the younger sister is like resentful that she wants this approval, but she also wants the approval. And she, you know, like I feel like you don't often see that, especially in holiday movies. Like the sibling relationships tend to get, I mean, as all the relationships in holiday movies do, they tend to get like sanded down. So I appreciated that I think you're right, Rachel. That is kind of the central relationship in the movie, which I really appreciated.
I wish we had more to say about this one, but it's just too short ultimately. But it was by far the best one. It was so just by a mile the best one.
Yeah, it made me want to see more from everybody in it. It made me want to see more of these characters. It made me want to see more from this writer and director. Like just all of it. I was just like, bring me more of everybody here.
Absolutely. I like followed all of them immediately on Instagram. I was like, I need to think more, please. I want to see what you work on next.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Just one note about this movie. We have talked at length about how much we love it and how amazing it is. The biggest bummer is this is not going to be the easiest one for people to watch. We got access to a screener of it, but I reached out to my contact yesterday about where you can find it. And they said that they don't have plans for distribution right now, but it's currently on the film festival circuit. So it's entirely possible that like you'll be able to see it at a film festival, and a lot of film festivals are online right now. So keep an eye out for that. The biggest, like the best thing you can do here is follow them on Instagram. So we will link to that in the show notes, and we'll link to their website, because it sounds like they're hoping to get it out there in front of a bigger audience. I really hope that happens, but the best thing to do is follow them for updates. So hopefully if it's coming to a film festival, you can get access and watch it.
Let's like maybe just mention that everyone should watch When Harry Met Santa.
our honorable mention.
Our honorable mention, because it's really delightful. I mean, unless either of you has anything you want to say about it specifically, I'm watching the clock here.
Yeah, I don't even know what to make of it. It took me a while to understand what was happening in it because I just didn't. It's like a lot is being communicated without a lot of words that I didn't get it quite right away. So if you're watching it, again, this is like a 3-minute commercial, but like it took me a minute to understand what was happening. It's horny. It's Norwegian. Santa is, I don't want to spoil the ending, but like Santa's flirting.
It is as if someone did a movie adaptation, like a gay movie adaptation of I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And hired the like director from Let the Right One In. So this is the one that I was like, I'm going to watch this at least 10 more times in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to watch this so many more times because it is so weird and dark and super horny, but like not explicitly sexual. And there is like a May-December romance thing happening. There's like a cross-generational thing happening. Like everything about it is I was like, whose idea was it to make Santa so gay and so like hot is like sort of so the vibe, hot, right? Like so desired.
Yeah.
I was like extremely in for this level of like deep dark weirdness.
He's also like not hot. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, yeah. No, go for it.
I was gonna say he's not like hot in the like traditional like hot Santa way. Yeah. Like they made Santa like a daddy, but he is still Santa and he still is an older man, which is part of why at first I was like, is this what's happening here? I'm not totally sure, because you also don't see that often in a commercial. Like it just really was not, my brain didn't know how to process it at first, but on second watch, it's still so weird, but at least I know what's happening now and I can like appreciate it for what it is.
The title I proposed was I Saw Daddy Kissing Santa Daddy, which there I think go. Is what's happening. I had the feeling watching this that I have when I'm watching Black Mirror, which is there's something happening in a universe that's like ours, but a little bit weirder and a little bit darker, but definitely is like a version of our universe. Like it had this like very, like kind of dark and uncanny feel to it. Mm-hmm. It's such a weird mélange of vibes. And for that reason alone, I have to give it 10 out of 10 stars.
Yeah, thumbs up. I think Black Mirror is exactly right, is the exact tone. And it's like, it's just, there's like that spookiness to it. And there's nothing bad happens in this, but it's that like unease of like, this is just a little too, it's our universe, but like just tweaked in this way that makes me like not trust it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I say, I'm like 1,000% in on this. It will go on my like frequently, like the YouTube must algorithm watch. Is going to start adjusting to give me more content. Like when Harry Met Santa, like all of it. I just am like, I can't express how here for this I am. Like just, I just love it. I just love it. So yeah, weird. So
I'm glad great. You feel that way.
So I think that the shorter they get, the better they get is what we're learning.
That's so true.
It really is.
Really is. Cut that runtime down and can make a better film.
Okay, we did it. We talked about all things queer, Christmas, romance.
And we saved the family business.
And we saved the family business. The train station will live to run another day.
Yeah, we raised the money. We won the gingerbread competition. We've got this.
We did it all. The ranch is fully functioning. I don't know. I mean, maybe write in and tell us your favorite queer romances, holiday romances, if we haven't mentioned. So far, Carol is the only one I officially recognize.
Yeah. I'm just going to throw this. This is stupid. I'm like fully acknowledging that, but I'm going to throw this out there. My girlfriend, when we have like a running thing about how The Grinch Stole Christmas, like the Jim Carrey version. And the other night she tried to tell me that was a queer Christmas movie. And I just want you two to mull that. I think it's a movie. I think it's a movie about an incel, but I'm open to other interpretations.
I haven't seen it, but now I will definitely watch it.
Okay, please watch it and report back.
I'm extremely into watching a Christmas movie that is somehow maybe queer and also maybe about an incel.
There's like only two. It's only one or the other.
It's one or the other.
I'm here for this. I will report back.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Having established that the Grinch is either about an insult or is a queer Christmas movie. Let's talk about a nice thing to end on. Rachel, we have a joint nice thing to end on this week. Do you want to tell the listeners what it is?
It is. I think this is a perfect thing to end on this episode. We wanted to shout out Trans Santa, which is an Instagram account that we will link to. The way that it works is that the account collects wish lists from trans youth. I think it's people under the age of 24. And they write a little letter that'll be like the picture on the Instagram account, sort of telling you a little bit about who they are. And then you click like the link in bio, you find the picture, it links to, I think for the most part, their Amazon wish list, but it allows you to sort of like safely and anonymously send gifts to trans youth in need. And like, it might, they often will say like, you know, I just moved out on my own and I really need like a winter coat and winter boots, or, you know, I like would love some art supplies or whatever the case may be. Huge range of like options in terms of like how much you want to spend, but we've both donated. We did it last year. It's such a lovely cause. And I think, you know, this is a time of year when people are thinking about how to be charitable toward others. And this is one that I'm like, this is the one for me. So highly recommend.
Yeah, please do it. It's so easy. You go to the Instagram account, you go to the link in bio, you click a few things, and before you know it, you've sent a young trans person some holiday stuff. So please, please do that right now.
All right. And Aubrey, as our guest, what is your nice thing to end on?
You guys had like a productive and like really lovely and important
thing. That's not the standard here. You know that.
and mine is extremely not important.
I love it already.
Yeah.
So Sally, I might have like text yelled at you about this show before, but my nice thing to end on is a TV show from the UK. I find myself in this sort of like ongoing trickle of pandemic kind of stuff. Things still feel really heavy and really hard in pandemic world. Things still feel really like rough and challenging, even like post-Trump presidency, right? Like there's just like a lot of aftershocks of a lot of things that are just not over and are not going to be over for a while. And that feels really heavy and serious. And the thing that I have been sort of like hungering for is something that is extremely not self-serious and extremely light and sort of fizzy. And that thing for me is a television show out of the UK called Taskmaster.
Okay.
Have we, Sally? That was the moment.
I've seen this. I know this is great. I have a couple friends who love this show so much and sing its praises all the time. I've seen some clips on YouTube and it is a genuine delight. I mean, it'll rearrange your brain in the right way. Please, Aubrey, say more.
Okay. So Taskmaster, the premise of Taskmaster, every season there's a cast of five comedians, sometimes actors, sometimes radio personalities, whatever. They are competing for the whole season. They are competing in tasks that categorically do not matter. They are nonsense tasks. So one of the early tasks was they're down at the bottom of a very steep hill on a windy day, and their job is to roll three yoga balls up to the top of the hill and have them stay there. They have two hands. So essentially what you're watching is people get one or two of the balls up to the top of the hill and then run down to get the other one, and then the other ones blow away. So like, part of what you're watching is just how these people respond under pressure, and no one responds especially well, right? So the whole show is sort of an exercise in like laughing at yourself and not taking things too seriously. They also have really lovely creative tasks. Like there is a very famous one amongst Taskmaster fans where the task is to make the most exotic sandwich, like with the most exotic ingredients. So someone makes one that's like hot dogs and sushi fish and like pineapple and whatever. They make this huge gross thing. And someone else makes one that's like all Nutella and candy. It's like a whole giant sweet sandwich. They get to the end of that task. They get the next task. And the next task is eat your exotic sandwich, fastest wins. Oh, my God. So it's just stuff like you're just watching people get thwarted in situations that don't matter. And it feels like this really lovely little B12 shot of like, oh, right. Some things are not serious. Some things are not heavy. Mm. Some things you just get to like mess up and it's fine. Right. You also get to see sort of the brilliant ways that people think around sort of the tasks and find their way through them. There is one fantastic task. It's one of my favorites, that is do a live action recreation of a video game. So someone makes Tetris pieces, like out of cardboard, and wraps them in construction paper, and has someone, she sits at the bottom of a treadmill and has someone feed the pieces down the treadmill to her.
That's so she's amazing. Genius.
Right? Like, it's totally brilliant. Anyway, I think there are 12 seasons. I think 11 of them are on YouTube, like in full in the US.
Okay.
If you're in the UK, it's on Channel 4's like free streaming website. Like, there are ways to get this. There's also a New Zealand version that is unbelievable. Like, it's next level. So anyway, this is like absolutely become one of my favorite TV shows. And it feels like just a perfect counterbalance to like the whole world as it is. Right.
Sounds like it. Is this like good, like, programming to watch with family, like when home?
It can be. I will say there is, I would say in the UK, more tolerance of language than there is here, like foul language. So just like be aware if you're in a family that's like chill with swearing and where kids understand like there are words that you hear and don't say or whatever, then you'll be fine with it. If that's a problem for you, just like heads up.
Yeah.
They also do have edited versions that are like kid safe.
Great.
Oh, nice.
So there you go. It's the joy of my world. I love it so much.
That's a great rec. I'd never heard of this. Oh, this is great.
This is something that my friends James and Bonnie have been like for months or a year. I think also it's a pandemic discovery for them. I've been like, you have to see it. And I have watched a couple of clips in it. I saw the Yoga Ball one. It was delightful. And it's just a matter of like sitting down to do it. And I'm going to have some time over the Christmas holiday. And I think it's time.
Nice. I might text spam you with a bunch of clips after
please
this.
Do
just
that.
Like,
yeah.
What's up?
That sounds wonderful.
Bring it.
Yeah.
That, I think that is like kind of like the definition of a nice thing to end on.
Yeah. Wonderful recommendation.
Thumbs up.
Aubrey, thank you. This was just an absolute delight. Please come back anytime to talk about anything. We'll do a special Grinch episode. We'll solve that problem.
We'll review it back together. Yeah. Film. Yeah.
I just want to say, like, everyone should follow Aubrey on Twitter, buy Aubrey's book, listen to Maintenance Phase, like, follow Aubrey on Instagram. Like, we'll have all those links in the show notes, but please get involved with all of Aubrey's brilliant work.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. I'm such a fan of the show. This is such a treat, and I will truly come back any old time to talk about incel-themed movies.
I think we should come back together for a quick Grinch follow-up because, to my mind, anything is a queer holiday movie if queer people watch it at the holidays and talk about it.
So true.
Maybe it becomes our – we make it, so we sanction it as a queer holiday
I think
movie.
We should all have to choose a movie – we should all choose a movie that we all have to watch, and then the person who chose it has to make an argument for why it's a queer holiday movie.
I was trying to argue last night that Showgirls is a queer holiday movie, but I don't, I wouldn't go all
I
in
believe
with
that instantly.
I wouldn't go all in with that, but I will say, I will die on this hill that Hustlers is a holiday movie. And I think,
I think
we can make the argument for it's got a found family vibe. So I think we could,
I think
we could make the argument for, I like this challenge though. This is our task that we'll take
this
on.
This is our task, master task.
Yep.
Okay. Having said all that, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Oh, I Like That. Please rate us and review us.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Oh, I Like That Pod or email us at Oh, I Like That Pod at gmail.com. You can also follow Sally and me. I'm the_REWM and Sally is at Sally T.
Oh, I Like That is produced by Rachel and Sally and edited by Lucas. Amber Seeger, who is Rocket Orca on social media, designed our logo.